Today's presenters are Justin Fries and Rich Montour. Justin and Rich both have over 10 years' experience providing Level 2 support for Webster MQ and have been supporting the service integration bus since the initial release of Webster Application Server version 6. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Justin and Rich.
Good morning. This is Justin Fries. You'll be hearing from Rich Montoy a little bit later in the presentation. I'd like to welcome everybody, and thank you for joining us today. I'm starting on slide 2, where you can see our agenda for the morning. I will start, with an introduction to WebSphere MQ, followed by a brief introduction to the service integration bus. Given that WebSphere MQ has been out for, I think, going on about 15 years, and the service integration bus is much newer, I'm going to assume that most of you have a greater background in WebSphere MQ than the service integration bus. But our goal is that this presentation should be accessible to somebody who's new to either technology, and at the same time, that those of you who have working systems and are quite familiar with both will learn something new that you don't already know. After an introduction to both, we will be discussing ways of connecting WebSphere MQ with the service integration bus, starting with the WebSphere MQ client link, which is an object primarily used for those of you who have or will be migrating from WebSphere Application Server version 5 or version 5.1. And we'll also explain how to configure one manually if you wish. At that point, Rich will join us, and he will discuss the WebSphere MQ link, including how to configure one between the service integration bus and MQ, how to secure one using SSL, and he'll also talk a little bit about data conversion and troubleshooting before we take your questions. Let's go on to slide 3. WebSphere MQ, as I mentioned before, it's been around about 15 years, although in the past it was known under the name MQ Series. It's a market-leading messaging product by IBM. I doubt that I need to tell you all what it's about. I'm sure most of you are familiar. WebSphere MQ is a native application that's installed on many operating systems. And the list of operating systems is quite large. Most Unix systems are covered. Windows versions as well, going back to, well, I think we started off in the Windows 3.1 and DOS days, actually. We have WebSphere MQ for OpenVMS, for HP nonstop systems, for ZOS, iSeries. There are a number of other platforms. In addition to those you'll find on the IBM webpage, IBM business partners will also have platforms available for some of the other Unix systems, some of the different chips that we maybe don't support directly. So MQ, I think they say that it's on about 35 platforms or more. When you install WebSphere MQ on a system, be it Windows or iSeries or Unix, you'll need to create a queue manager. And the queue manager is created by the administrator, as the FOIL says, after you install. A queue manager is the unit of administration. It's the thing that your administrators or that you will be working with and configuring. It contains queues, which will hold message data, persistent messages or non-persistent messages. The queue manager is responsible for maintaining data integrity, and this includes supporting reliable transactions, whether we're talking about local transactions involving only MQ or XA transactions which involve MQ and WebSphere or Kix or DB2 or other database products. WebSphere MQ supports point-to-point messaging, and it also supports publish-subscribe messaging. It can do so natively. It ships a broker which can do publish-subscribe, or you can use WebSphere MQ with other products such as WebSphere Message Broker, which are greater capacity publish-subscribe products. Now, intercommunication between queue managers is manually achieved. You have to define channels which create links between queue managers, usually over TCP/IP, although MQ also supports other protocols like LU62, and I think we still have things like SPX and NetBIOS in there. If you want to have more dynamic configuration between queue managers, you can group them into clusters, and it is possible for MQ to create channels and route messages dynamically. On to the next FOIL, then. The service integration bus, unlike MQ, is not a product in its own right. It's actually a core component of WebSphere Application Server version 6.0 and later. It comes right with the application server. It's not a separate installation or anything like that. And within WebSphere Application Server, it provides Java Message Server support. A service integration bus is created of messaging engines, which we'll be talking about a bit more later on. Messaging engines are created by the administrator after you have your WebSphere installation or perhaps an entire WebSphere cell set up. A messaging engine contains queues and also topics which hold message data. And like MQQ managers, a messaging engine supports message persistence and transactionality. It's responsible for being able to recover if a messaging engine should fail for any reason or perhaps a whole machine would go down. And like MQ, the service integration bus can do point-to-point and publish-subscribe messaging. There is a little bit of a difference now with regard to intercommunication. If you have a service integration bus set up within a WebSphere cell, messaging engines that you create in that bus will communicate without any manual configuration. So it's a little bit like having an MQ cluster without any extra work. As far as having multiple buses, you can do so, but you have to manually define a link from bus to bus. Foil 5, please. I mentioned that WebSphere MQ is installed natively on a system. You can create one or more queue managers on any system with MQ installed. In WebSphere Application Server, there is a topology or hierarchy to the application server itself, and you'll find that service integration buses adhere to that hierarchy. It's possible to install standalone WebSphere application servers, but in most enterprise setups, you'll find WebSphere installed as a cell, which is a collection of servers with centralized administration through the deployment manager. A cell is made up of one or more nodes. A node is typically an individual machine which runs one or more servers in the cell. And as for the server itself, that's the actual Java runtime or Java virtual machine that makes up an application server. This is where your applications will be running. In addition, we have the ability to do clustering in WebSphere. A cluster is simply a group of application servers which happen to be using basically the same configuration. They're running the same set of applications. The idea is that if you have a cluster of, say, four servers, as long as one of those four is available, the cluster and hence the application will remain available. This is also used for workload balancing as well as high availability purposes. Foil 6, please. This foil you'll find will in some ways mirror the other one a bit. A bus is a group of messaging engines with centralized administration. A bus is cell-wide, so if you compare to the previous foil, it's at the same point as I mentioned the cell earlier. A bus member is a server, or it could also be a cluster of servers, which host a messaging engine. And the next thing we talked about a little before is a messaging engine. A messaging engine is a service which is responsible for handling bus destinations, connections from applications, messages sent to the bus, received from the bus, transactions. The messaging engine is the runtime entity that does all of the work as your applications run and as messages are routed through the bus. A destination is a queue or a topic which is located within a messaging engine capable of holding messages. And I'd also like to add one point. Each messaging engine maintains a data store. In WebSphere version 6.0, the data store for a messaging engine had to be held in an external database. You can do that in WebSphere version 6.1, or you can create a messaging engine which stores its information and manages it in what we call a file store, in a local file system without having to have a database. All of the data and the transaction information associated with a messaging engine is held in the data store or the file store. And for an example, let's turn to Foil 7. This is a simplified view of a cell. I'm not showing the deployment manager or node agents. We want to focus just on the bus, and there's so much about the rest of WebSphere that we could spend a lot of time talking about, but I just don't have the time to do it. Within the cell, the first bus word that you see in red is a definition. We've defined a bus called first bus. The definition itself is at the cell level, and it's nothing more than a definition. There's nothing that runs when you just create a bus definition. You can create a ton of them, and they don't do anything until you start to add bus members. On the right-hand side, I've shown that we've added server 2 as a member of first bus. Adding a server or a cluster as a member of a bus is going to create a new messaging engine on that server or on that cluster. And when you do so, you have the ability to configure how that messaging engine will work. Will it use an external database? Will it use a file store and so forth? In this bus, the messaging engine number 1, and by the way, the term ME is common abbreviation for messaging engine. You'll see it throughout the following flows. ME number 1 is going to be handling all of the messaging activity for the first bus. Programs which are running on server 2 can access the messaging resources in ME1. They can put to queues and subscribe to topics and so forth. The applications running in servers 1, 3, and 4 can also do so with no difficulties whatsoever. So there's a certain amount of location transparency. You don't really need to know where your messaging engines are running in the bus when you are writing applications. It should all be handled pretty much automatically for you. Slide 8, please. Here's a little more complicated example. In this case, we're starting with the same cell we had before. We had first bus. We're adding next bus. So the first step is to create the bus definition, represented by the green text, next bus. In order for that bus to do anything, we need to add some bus members. So we add server 2, and we get a second messaging engine. Actually, the first messaging engine for this bus. And that's shown in green on server 2. The next step, for a little bit of variety, we've added cluster A as a bus member, which creates a messaging engine that's available on both members of the cluster, ME number 3. Now you'll see that on server 3 it's shown in bright green, and on server 4 it's somewhat grayed out. What this means is that the messaging engine will be running on only one of these servers at a time. On the other server, it will be in standby mode. Actually, the state is going to be called a joined state. If anything should happen to server 3, that it should crash or the messaging engine should come down, then the messaging engine will be activated on server 4. And applications should be able to connect and continue running with little trouble. You can note here that a server does not need to have any messaging engines at all. Applications running in server 1 can connect to both buses with no trouble. Or you can have messaging engines for more than one bus on a single server. Either is fine. Flow 9, please. So now, why connect FIB and MQ? If there's not a good reason for this, then frankly we can lop off the rest of the presentation. But there are some good reasons for connecting the two. WebSphere MQ is well established. As I say, it's been around just about 15 years. It runs on some operating systems that are not directly supported by WebSphere Application Server. On the other hand, the service integration bus is, as you can see, its topology is mapped very closely to that of an application server cell. All of its administration is integrated directly into the administrative console. So it's a very close fit to the application server. So it's good that the two should be able to communicate seamlessly, and I think we will show in the presentation that they can. It's also important that if you are running MQ and MQ serves your needs, there is no need to rip it out and replace it with a service integration bus or vice versa. Instead, you can use either product where it works best for you, horses for courses, as they say, and just make the two communicate together when you need to bridge the gap. Finally, communication between the service integration bus and MQ is important for those of you upgrading from WebSphere version 5. WebSphere version 5 used MQ under the covers and now uses a service integration bus and does so seamlessly, as will be shown shortly. All right, next set of foils, we're going to be talking about the WebSphere MQ client link. This is foil 10. Thank you. The WebSphere MQ client link is a service integration bus object which accepts connections from MQ JMS applications. It emulates a server connection channel, for those of you with MQ administration background. And to the MQ applications, they think that they're talking to a queue manager instead of a bus. They really are none the wiser. It's important to note that, It's important to note that the WebSphere MQ client link emulates only those interfaces that are used by the MQ JMS classes. If you were to take a native MQ client program, if it was a very simple program, it might work. More complex programs won't, but neither is supported. This is JMS only. There is a bit of overhead to the MQ client link. Every MQ JMS API that is sent to the client link has to be translated from MQ terms to SIB terms for the bus to process it. And then the response, once it's generated, has to be converted back to MQ terms for the application. There is some overhead associated with that. But the advantage is that it does give a clean upgrade path for anybody who was using WebSphere version 5 or 5.1. On we go. Foil 11, please. So in WebSphere version 5 and 5.1, WebSphere Application Server shipped with WebSphere MQ 5.3 and also with WebSphere MQ Event Broker 2.1. Those are also sold as standalone products, or were at the time. But in WebSphere Application Server version 5, they were just made available under the covers, and they were referred to as the embedded WebSphere JMS provider. Neither of these products was intended to be directly seen or directly administered by users. Everything was to be done through the administrative console. So, for example, if you define some queues in your admin console, those queues will automatically show up and be secured in your embedded MQ queue manager. And any JMS applications running in the application server, which used the WebSphere JMS provider, under the covers were connecting as clients to that embedded queue manager and also to the broker. Foil 12 shows us a picture of what it looked like. Here we see on the left an application server in sort of a purple orb, and on the right an associated JMS server in blue. Every node in a cell was allowed to have one JMS server, which encapsulates a queue manager and the broker. Now, on the left-hand side, the little squares that say WSTCF, WSQCF, and WSQ, those represent JNDI objects defined in the application server directory that JMS applications can use to connect to this embedded WebSphere JMS provider. Any queues which are defined to the WebSphere application server will appear in the embedded queue manager. However, they're going to have the letters WQ underscore prefixed to their name, which is intended to show that they are WebSphere-managed queues. Any JMS application which uses JNDI objects for the WebSphere JMS provider, in other words, WebSphere JMS provider topic connection factories, queue connection factories, or queues, will connect as clients to that embedded queue manager. The arrow, the first arrow moving to the right, which is in red, shows that anybody using a TCF or QCF, that is a topic or queue connection factory, will connect to the MQ listener through a server connection channel called waz.jms.servercon and then to the actual queue manager. On we go to the next foil, where we'll show how we migrate from this setup. When you move to WebSphere version 6 or to version 6.1, there's a careful migration process if you have any JMS servers set up. First, the migration process is going to create a bus, and the bus is going to be named after your node for any node that had embedded messaging. Second, that JMS server that was the sort of bluish orb on the right is going to be made a bus member, and creating or adding a bus member creates a messaging engine. So now we have the equivalent of a queue manager in that messaging engine. Third, any queues that were in the embedded MQQ manager will now be created in the bus and on that messaging engine. However, they're going to be created under their real name without the WQ underscore prefix. So to keep that mapping alive for anybody relying upon it, we will also create an alias for every queue which maps WQ underscore name to the actual name. And the last step, possibly the most important, is we're going to create a WebSphere MQ client link for all the existing applications that think they need to connect to an embedded MQQ manager. The MQ client link is going to emulate that WAS.JMS.ServerCon channel. It allows applications to work without any application changes and typically without any JNDI changes. There is one minor exception to that rule that deals with anybody who is doing a direct connection to the embedded MQ broker. That's fairly uncommon, and it's described in the manual, so I probably won't go into it here. The MQ client link is going to speak the MQ client channel. For MQ mavens out there, this is the MQ client FAP, or the format and protocol. It's the on-the-wire protocol that MQ uses. And as I say, it hides the fact that we've swapped out that embedded queue manager for a service integration bus messaging engine. Foil 14 shows the new picture. Pretty similar to the old picture. Instead of a queue manager and broker, we have a messaging engine. The applications that we're using, WebSphere, JMS provider, TCFs, QCFs, and queues, don't have to be changed at all. Internally, we're going to rename those JNDI objects to version 5 default messaging provider objects, but their attributes are essentially unchanged. Any application that uses a version 5 connection factory will find itself connecting to the messaging engine using that MQ client link object that was created, the MQ client link emulating that WAS.JMS.ServerCon channel. And if you follow the red arrows to the right and then down, you'll see that we continue to provide that alias to map the WQ underscore names to the real names of the queues. Any applications that you have which are continue to use these version 5 objects in the client link, it's worthwhile considering moving them to either using the service integration bus directly, or if you have external WebSphere MQ version 6, you can also use that. This is a really migration, and eventually the goal is to have no V5 objects and no V5 using applications. On to the next foil, 15. So what we talked about was the automated migration from version 5 to version 6. In version 6, if you haven't upgraded, or you just did a straight version 6 or 6.1 install, or if you have a need to, you can create an MQ client link manually. We're going to have several graphics from the administrative console in this presentation. I would point out that at the top, each of them should show the path that you need to follow when you turn to your admin console. For example, buses, I've got a bus name called Boston Bus, messaging engines, and then a messaging engine name. If you follow that basic path, you'll have to probably change the names for your system. You should then see the options on the right. And if you click on WebSphere MQ Client Links, the red arrow shows that you're going to see a panel like the one on the left. You'll need to give a name for your link. I've chosen one called Boston Client Link. You need to give a MQ channel name. I've chosen WAS.JMS.ServerCon, but you could actually give a different name if you chose. And as far as the queue manager name, I've chosen the same format of queue manager name that would have been used in the past, or fairly similar, but again, you can actually give any name that you wish. The link, as I say, it's going to emulate an MQ queue manager. It will pretend to be whatever name you give. It'll pretend whatever ServerCon channel name you want. And as far as listening for connections, if you go into the application server, there are two ports on which the MQ client link will listen. One is secured by SSL and the other is not. Foil 17, please, or 16. So in WebSphere 6 and 6.1, you're going to be left with three JMS providers by default. The version 5 default messaging provider is for anybody who's migrated. Any applications using those objects, by which I mean topic and queue connection factories and queues, are going to connect over an MQ client link. If you look at a V5 default messaging queue or topic connection factory, you'll note that it doesn't contain any real connection parameters. It'll just say, what node do you want to connect on? But there's no IP address, no queue manager name, none of that. The reason is that those values are figured out automatically at runtime. What happens is that the application server will say, will query itself and say, what is the host name of the JMS server and what port number is it using? And the port number used to be called the JMS server queued address. So it will consult its configuration files and figure out these values and use them at runtime, which is great if you've migrated from version 5. If you haven't, if you've just created a link manually, you're not going to have a JMS server. And any version 5 connection factories are going to default to connecting to localhost port 5558. That might not be what you want. It might not work in your environment. In any case, anybody using these V5 objects is going to be limited to the JMS 1.0 API. Most applications these days are using 1.1. So, that's the V5 default messaging provider from which you will be migrating with luck in the following breeze to one of the others, either the WebSphere MQ messaging provider or default messaging. WebSphere MQ, any topic connection factories, queue connection factories, connection factories that are defined under this provider will connect you to a real WebSphere MQ queue manager, either one installed locally or one installed remotely. However, you could use these to connect to a WebSphere MQ client link and rely on the link pretending to be a queue manager. It's not really recommended. As I say, the link is intended really for migration, but in a pinch you can do so. As far as the default messaging provider, anybody who writes applications which use those objects will connect directly to a service integration bus. No translation between MQ and SIB terms. You're going to have, on average, probably better performance. And it's important to note that any applications which use JNDI objects for the default messaging provider are going to be using the service integration bus classes, not the MQ JMS classes. That about says it for the MQ client link, so I'm going to turn over now to Rich Monchoy, who will take us through the WebSphere MQ link. Thank you.
Slide 17, please. Good morning, everyone. Okay, so the MQ client link is just the connection between SIB and MQ. It converts the channel formats and protocols used by SIB and MQ, and it does that work for you. Each link is tied to a specific message engine, and the ME is what manages your messaging for you. And we like to consider it similar to a queue manager in MQ. And incidentally, the ME name is going to be in the form of bus name and server name. As Justin mentioned earlier, to SIB, MQ is just another bus. And to MQ, SIB is just another queue manager. And they don't share any configuration data, any code, anything like that. Next slide, please. Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the definitions that you need to set up for the MQ link config on the SIB side. First, there's something called a foreign bus. The foreign bus is essentially just a proxy, and it could be another bus in the same cell, it could be another bus outside the cell, or in our case, using the MQ link, it's going to be a queue manager. And there's also a sender-receiver channel for the link, which is going to be connected to the sender-receiver channel pair that you have in MQ. And finally, there's going to be a foreign bus destination, which, much like the foreign bus, is going to be a proxy to a queue or topic space associated with the foreign bus that resolves to the local queue on MQ. Next slide, please. Okay, now here we got to look at the admin panel for the foreign bus. And again, the foreign bus is what defines the remote queue manager to the bus. And this routing field here specifies whether you're going to be using an MQ link or you're going to be using a service integration bus link. The inbound and outbound user IDs on the routing properties for the foreign bus can replace user IDs applied to messages entering or leaving the bus. And the bottom right comment there is just to let you know that this has spanned over three separate panels. We didn't have room here, so that's what that's about. And in order for the outbound and inbound user ID routing properties to be used, you need to make sure that you have bus security enabled for that to work. Next slide, please. Slide 20. Okay, so the MQ link defines the connection to Forum Bus, which is the remote key manager. And you can have multiple Forum Buses defined, each with only one MQ link. The queue manager name field in the MQ link is what MQ will know the bus as. And there's some common properties associated with both sender-receiver channels that are included on the MQ link definition. Later we'll see that when we go and define the sender and receiver channels for the link, that there's some specifics for each one of those channels individually. But the link does contain properties that are applicable to both. So this is the panel that you would do that on. Next slide, please. 21. Okay, here is the MQ link sender channel. And just like with the MQ, the sender channel needs to match the receiver channel on the MQ side. There's a transport chain setting that controls whether you're going to be doing the outbound basic MQ link or you're going to be doing a secure basic MQ link. And the secure basic MQ link will be using SSL. And you may want to be, at this point, asking yourself what the heck really is this transport chain, but you can think of it as just the network protocol that the channels are using to make the connection across. Next slide, please. Slide 22, I believe. Okay, here we have a receiver panel here, and we're going to spend some time on this one because there's a lot to it. The channel name must match the sender channel on the MQ side. And you'll notice the inbound non-persistent message reliability and the inbound persistent message reliability. And what that is about is MQ has two persistence levels, persistent and non-persistent. And when the message flows across from MQ, this is a way for you to determine what you want that to map to. So with the non-persistent message reliability, you can say a non-persistent message coming from MQ can map to one of the three non-persistent quality of service options that you have with SID. The same thing with persistent messages. If you have a persistent message coming across, you have two quality of service persistent settings for SID. The defaults, I believe, are assured persistent for persistence and reliable persistence for, express non-persistence for non-persistent messages. And if you notice at the bottom there, we have our transport chain set up. And the default ports for those are 5558 for an insecure connection and 5578 for a secure connection. The MQ-Link receiver is going to be essentially listening on both those transport chains, and it's going to handle requests coming across both those. And you might want to keep in mind with your quality of service setting up above, I wanted to mention this, that the higher your quality of service setting is, the slower your performance is going to be. So if you want things to be persistent to the highest persistence level, it means you're going to suffer performance hits. And likewise, if you make things non-persistent, then your performance is going to speed up for you. Slide 23, please. Okay, the foreign destination, as we mentioned, is just a proxy to an MQ queue, and it just identifies a destination on another bus. In this case, that would be MQ. Typically, the name is going to be in the form of Q at QManager. You notice the shipping.ql at madrid.qm, where madrid.qm is the QManager name on the MQ side. The messages are sent to the destination, and they're forwarded to the ME and sent across the link. I would like to mention that instead of a foreign destination, it is possible to use an alias destination. Alias destinations just give you a level of abstraction. You can actually chain alias destinations together. I could have an alias destination pointing to an alias destination, pointing to an alias destination, pointing to a foreign bus destination. the key point is that you have to have a actually proper queue at the end of it to receive the message. And next slide, please. Okay, slide 24. Here we're looking at our MQ definitions that we define inside of RunMQ SC. Those of you familiar with MQ, no real surprises here. We're defining a local queue called shipping.ql, and that's going to be the intended destination coming from the SIB side across. That's where the message is going to end up. The queue remote, you'll notice the remote name for the queue is billing input, so when we send across, that's ultimately where the message is going to go. And the remote queue manager name is boston.qm, which is the name we specified for our bus. The channel configuration, we've got matching sender and receiver channels, just like we have on the MQ link. The names match. If you notice in the con name there, the port is 5558, which tells us that we're going across the insecure transport chain in this example. Then, of course, we've got our listener defined, so we can get the incoming traffic from SIB, and we start the listener. Number 25, please. Here's just a screenshot on your application servers and admin console. There's a port option in there, and you can go in and take a look. And this is useful for your MQ administrators to know what to set their con name on their sender channel. So if you notice, you've got the SIB MQ endpoint address is set at 5558, and the SIB MQ endpoint secure address is 5578. So if you need to check that, those are the default values that can change depending on how many servers and what kind of configuration you have. Slide 26, please. Okay, here's a slide showing you the MQ link statuses. They're much like the MQ statuses. They can be stopped, inactive, running. Typically, you want to think of it as green as goodness. The little green arrow is green. You're typically in good shape. It'll either be in standby or running. And you can stop these with a quiesce or a mode force, just like with a MQ channel. And the Info Center actually does a pretty good job of relaying each of these channel statuses for you, so I won't go into a whole lot of detail on it due to the time. But I would encourage you to go take a look there. If you're playing around with this and you notice some inconsistencies in the documentation of the Info Center, then I would encourage you to check your maintenance levels, because we have had a few APARs in that where the status isn't actually, maybe things seem to be working, but the status isn't displaying things correctly. So check your maintenance level, and then if you still have problems and you want to give a call into support on that. Page 27, please. Okay, this, if you understand this slide, then you pretty much have a good feeling of MQ Link. Justin did a particularly good job on this slide, I think. So if we start on the left, you're putting a message to the shipping.ql on the MQ side. So if you follow the flow across, the message is going to go to the foreign destination on the foreign bus, and it's going to get routed across the channel via the transport chain that you have configured. And MQ is going to receive that message and put it on the shipping.ql queue. Now, if we go from the right, from MQ to SIB, we put our message on our billing.queue remote. It gets a transmission header attached to it. It moves to the transmission queue. The sender channel will start off if it's triggered. The message moves across over the transport chain. MQ link receiver channel gets the message, and then it ends up on the billing.input queue. So if you kind of can follow that across, then you get a good idea. And worth noting here that if you wanted to play around with this setup a little bit, there's nothing that keeps you from changing the foreign bus destination name to essentially be the billing.qr, even on the MQ side. So the message is actually routed to the billing.qr queue, and then the message does kind of a loop all the way across from MQ and then back again. Page 28, please. A bit of a limitation with MQ links, in that the MQ sender channel, there's only a place in there for you to specify a single IP address or host name. So in an ME failover situation where you have an ME running inside of a cluster, and for some reason there's some problem with that server and the ME fails over to another server in the cluster, the IP address changes, but MQ doesn't have a way of knowing that. So there's a support pack. It's an MQ series support pack that actually provides a channel exit that lets you put a list of IP addresses for your channel to use, and it'll actually move through that list and find a channel that it can connect to when the ME starts back up on the other server. And Justin will point you to that a URL for the MR01 at the end of the presentation. Foil 29, please. Okay, securing the link. We felt a little bit of an obligation to add some security in there. Security is a really big beast inside of WebSphere. It encompasses a lot of things. You can secure a bus, a destination, a data store. There's all kinds of security settings in here, but what we're going to focus on here is just simply securing the link. So how that's done in with MQ is we just alter our channel definition, so we're going to specify a cipher spec with changing our host name port to 557A, which is the secure port or secure transport chain we use. And full 30, please. Now on the SIB side, there's something called an SSL repertoire. And what SSL repertoire does is it points you to the location of your key stores and trust stores. There's a default SSL repertoire that's set up for you automatically with WAS, but you're not recommended to use that with your MQ links because WAS uses that itself. So you don't want to be making changes inside of there that might affect other things inside of WebSphere. So the recommendation is to create a new SSL repertoire, and then the only thing you have to do at that point is you modify your link transports to associate them with this SSL repertoire, and you change each one of those inbound and outbound links. There's a bit of a problem with the outbound transport chain in that you have to modify that using WSAdmin scripting. There's not a way to do that inside of the admin console. I've been talking with development about that, and they realize that that's kind of a problem, and there should be a page inside the admin console to let you do that. And they're kind of hoping for a customer to raise a requirement form so they can delegate the resources on that. So if there's anybody on the call who wants to volunteer for that, that would be nice to move things along. Page 31, please. Okay, securing the link. This kind of picks up on what we were talking about before, but the only big thing I want to talk about on this thing is that part of the security for the link is you can disable the insecure transport chain for the receiver. The receiver is going to be sitting there looking for stuff over 5578 and 5558, and what this will do will allow you to disable any non-SSL transports coming into the link. Okay, page 32, please. Data conversion. Not a whole lot to talk about here, but we felt obligated to mention it a little bit. The SIB is going to be using Unicode, MQ, you know, the CCS ID associated with the key manager. The one thing you want to be aware of that if you're going to need to convert something going from MQ to SIB, you're going to need to do it on the sender channel with convert equals yes going across because there's no get with convert on the SIB side. And also, going from SIB to MQ, you're going to need to do the get with convert because there's no option on the MQ link sender channel to convert the message for you. Slide 33, please. And now we go into troubleshooting. I'd like to mention that there's a couple pages, I believe, in the Info Center on troubleshooting an MQ link as well, so you may want to refer to those, but here are some of the ones that we chose to talk about. You want to make sure that your object names in SIB and MQ match. We talked about that. And remember that MQ is going to uppercase things by default. We've seen some PMRs where people are having some trouble with sequence number mismatches, and typically we find out that that's due because they've deleted a channel on one side or the other. And you want to make sure you've got your port numbers and addresses correctly. And we talked earlier about going into the admin console and checking the port values, because they may not be the defaults, and they may cause you some problems. And we want to make sure that your channels are enabled and you've got your listeners running. And slide 34, please. And now I'd like to turn it over to Justin. Justin will talk to you a little bit about a summary of the presentation, and then he'll point out some useful URLs for you. We've got some walkthroughs in these URLs specific to an SSL setup and even a walkthrough of an MQ client link setup. So, Justin.
Thanks, Rich. Yes, this is, I guess, the point where we tell you what we told you. We discussed earlier on a WebSphere MQ client link, which is primarily for migration from WebSphere version 5, but you can also manually define and use one. And Rich spent a good bit of time talking about the WebSphere MQ link, which is the primary vehicle for transmitting messages back and forth between the service integration bus and a queue manager. On the SI bus side, it involves foreign bus definition, a link definition, which includes sender and receiver channels. And on MQ, it involves the familiar objects we've used for many years now, queues, sender and receiver channels again, and a listener. And Rich also covered how to secure a WebSphere MQ link using SSL and a bit about troubleshooting. On file foil 35, please. I know this is the part of the presentation where everybody sort of zones out. That's a lot of URLs. I'd like to think that we've included some especially good ones, though, which I hope you will check out after this presentation is over. The first link describes how to configure a service integration bus in a WebSphere network deployment cell. It has more detail than we can include in this presentation and is well worth viewing. The next one is pretty voluminous. It's an 8-part series about building an enterprise service bus with WebSphere application server. Part 6 in particular focuses on communications between MQ and the service integration bus. But I recommend all 8. They're very good. Rich mentioned the support pack MR01 if you have a link in a cluster and you want your MQQ manager to be able to find it wherever it may be running. And we also have a document about data conversion with WebSphere MQ. And finally, on foil 36, there are several more links here which will help you if you are interested in securing your communications between the application server and WebSphere MQ. The middle link there says the WebSphere MQ Service Integration Bus Must Gather page. If you do run into any problems with Service Integration Bus, with the link, with any of it, and need to call in a problem record, please take a look at this page first. It will describe the kind of information that we're going to be interested in seeing. It has relatively recently been rewritten, and I hope that you'll find it clear and useful. Following that is, of course, the Information Center, the 6.1. 6.0 Information Center is also available, of course. And finally, the Application Server and MQ Main Support pages. If you're unfamiliar with those pages, there is a search bar in the middle of them through which you can search through a number of documents that have been written up by the respective WebSphere and MQ support teams. And some of it may address your questions if you're having any trouble. That concludes our part of the presentation. Elijah, I'd like to turn it back to you.
Thank you, Rich and Justin, for a great presentation.
We'll go to our first question from Rajesh Bahab with Oracle.
What's the difference between connecting directly to MQ from the WebSphere application server and connecting via the service bus?
Connecting to WebSphere application server, so if you write an application that's using service integration bus, connection factories, and so forth, it's primarily, as opposed to going directly to MQ, do you mean?
Right. I mean, there are two ways. One is, you can specify activation specification and then connect directly to service integration bus, and the other way is to create a listener ports and then connect to the MQ.
Sure. The listener ports are... they're an older technology. They're largely being phased out in favor of activation specifications. You can use either. I think you'll find that the performance of activation specifications should be a little bit better. One knock on activation specifications has been that they don't give you some of the administrative control of a listener port. You can't stop one, for example, and restart it at a moment of your choosing. That's an issue, I believe, that is addressed or will be addressed in maintenance level 6.1.0.13. They're going to add that ability to them. But generally, which you use will probably come down to what is installed nearby or what must you communicate with. If you have programs running underneath WebSphere that need to access a queue manager elsewhere, at the moment you'll probably be using listener ports and so forth and connecting to MQ as a client as opposed to using the service integration bus.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now go to our next question from Andrew Bayroll with S1 Corporation.
My question is on whether there's any good documentation out there on how to do IBUS to IBUS connections. I've done the IBUS to MQ connections fine, but I wanted to try the IBUS to IBUS, and it doesn't quite work, and I think I'm missing something from the documentation in WebSphere.
I think that the eight-part series that I mentioned at the end of this presentation does discuss setting up links between service integration buses. I don't know if it will address the particular problem that you're having.
Okay, I'll look back at that set then. I didn't remember seeing it in that whole series, but possibly it's there.
Okay. It actually, that may be a good topic for us to perhaps give one of these presentations on next time. Tell you what, let me give you my email address, and if you're running into a specific problem, send me a note, and perhaps we can point you to some good documentation.
That would be perfect.
Sure. My address is JUSTIN, as in Nancy, F as in Frank, Justin F, at us.ibm.com.
Okay, so it's Justin F at us.ibm.com?
us.ibm.com, that's right.
Okay. Yes, Matt. That was F as in Fox, right?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. We'll go next to Carrie Hugh with IBM.
Hi, I have a question regarding WebSphere MQ link. In a cluster environment, like if I have a bus and I have add a cluster as a bus member, and the backend on MQ side, I have a main primary queue manager, and I have another backup queue manager. So just in case one of my servers down, I can use another MQ link to talk to connect to another queue manager on MQ side. So how many MQ link I should define in this case?
Well, thank you for the question. In MQ, the configuration we most often see for HA is when you have a single queue manager that is can fail back and forth between, say, two machines, like in an HACMP or a service guard setup, something like that. In which case, what usually will happen is that the two machines will have a floating virtual IP address, and your single MQ link sender will just connect via that virtual address to either one. Now, if you wanted to have two queue managers, you would actually have to create two foreign bus definitions, each one with a separate MQ link. I think the problem that you may run into is that any messages that you put through a foreign destination that are bound for the one bus, if that bus isn't available, they're not going to suddenly, there's no way of remapping them to suddenly be destined for the other bus. So I don't think you can really have two MQ links which back each other up. Instead, I think it's better to have the sender MQ link in a WebSphere cluster and the receiving side in an MQ high availability failover cluster.
So in that case, the MQ, normally it's not recommended to have a two MQ queue manager. So from MQ side, they are using a HA format. So we only need one MQ link in this case.
That's correct. And that MQ link would be pointing at the virtual IP address for the HA failover environment.
Okay, but I have another question. If they do want to, you know, the like a backup queue manager available, like just during the failover or crashing, so in this case, from WAS perspective, because you know bus number is a cluster, WAS cluster. So in your presentation, you show that that shows that only one messaging engine actually active at a certain time. So only one ME. So in that case, for even though we want to create two MQ link, how to connect those two MQ link to one ME?
Well, the two MQ links can run on a single ME. A single messaging engine can host any number of links to however many forum buses that you have. However, what you cannot define at the moment are two MQ links which point to the same forum bus.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like that might be what you're looking for.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Which may be a good requirement to suggest.
All right.
And as a final reminder, to ask a question or make a comment, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone at this time. We'll go next to Alex Sanchez with GBM. Mr. Sanchez, your line is open. Mr. Sanchez,
hi.
Go ahead.
We have several applications. There's the application server, version 5 applications working using JMS client connections to WebSphere MQ server, and I saw you mentioned that it's necessary to migrate if you're planning to use WebSphere application server version 6, it's necessary to make a migration to use MQ client links. So the question is that extremely necessary? I mean, JMS client connections is not supported on version 6 for WebSphere application server, or the application can still work using embedded messaging, or is it necessarily to migrate these applications to the system integration bus environment?
All right. I believe that when you do the upgrade to WebSphere 6.0 or to 6.1, if you have an embedded MQ queue manager and broker, there will be an automatic migration process that should be seamless and utterly transparent to your applications. They'll be connecting over an MQ client link after the migration to a messaging engine, and they shouldn't know it. The as far as providers go, it should behave exactly like the old embedded MQ queue manager and the broker. So that should be transparent to you and to your applications. Once you have already done the migration, though, you'll have a lot of applications using these V5 default messaging JNDI objects. We recommend that either you create a real bus of your own, a service integration bus, create destinations in it, and then start creating service integration bus connection factories to access it directly, which is going to cut out the overhead of that MQ link and the translation it needs to do. Or if you have WebSphere MQ installed locally or elsewhere in your network, you can connect your applications directly to a real MQ queue manager somewhere else, as opposed to the old embedded MQ queue manager. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it's okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Justin and Rich, for presenting today.